Hello, it's Elliot from the Many Sided Media team here to tell you that we are running our first ever Patreon drive. Our goal is to get 100 new or upgrading annual members at any tier to join the Patreon. So, why are we doing this? We want to ensure that Many Sided Media can continue to produce all the shows you know and love, Talk of the Table, My First Dungeon, Bitcherton, as well as some new shows that we're excited to tell you about in the year to come. We want to keep Many Sided Media surviving and thriving for the next year and years beyond, paying people fairly for the work they do and keeping everybody happy, healthy, not burnt out. The best way for you to support these efforts is to join our Patreon. What you get when you join? Bonus talkbacks, bonus actual plays, our newsletter, the Many-Sided Newsletter, the exclusive show Under the Table where Brian and I talk about business, and a whole lot more. So please head to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and pledge your support. Thank you so much. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
This week, we are sitting down with Diana Faye, a.k.a. Diana of the Rose, a creator, host, panelist, performer, and more for all things TTRPGs online. Diana, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hello. That was an amazing intro. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
I am amazed we made it work.
I'm amazed. And we, just by the skin of our teeth, I was like, oh, this moves way faster when you're going to music.
It really does.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. We're very excited to chat with you. So for folks watching, this is the first ever Talk of the Table live recording. So thank you to everyone who is here. And thank you, Diana, for being our first live guest. So exciting. And what a relevant episode to be our first live Talk of the Table, because we are talking to you, a content creator in the space. But you are not just a content creator. You have many, 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 many hats that you wear within that.
Oh, yeah.
And so today, we love to get into the nitty-gritty. We love to talk details. We love to talk advice. And so we want to talk all about content creation in TTRPGs as a job. And with that, Diana, my first question for you is TTRPG content creation your full-time job?
Oh, actually, no. And I will say, I can think of maybe five people in the space as a whole who aren't part of, like, you know, actually, I think maybe five people in the space as a whole, including folks who are in the big leagues, you know, Critical Role and Dimension 20 and all that, who are actually full-time at just TTRPG content creation. Almost everyone in the space has a second job, whether it's doing, you know, freelance work, or a lot of us do writing. You know, they'll do DMing on Start Playing, which is its own thing. But no, I still have my day job. I work remote. They are very cool about the fact that I also have content creation on the side. It's definitely been a way easier fight to keep things sustainable with two paychecks coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you think about, like, where this fits into your job, TTRPGs and TTRPG related stuff, would you bring it up to the level of like a part-time job? Does that feel accurate?
I mean, if we go by the definition of like fully straight up just the amount of hours I put into things, I honestly think it counts as more of a full-time job.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially when you take into account like streaming, right? Where it's, you have to be on camera. The amount of editing work, because I do all my own editing, I do all my own management, so I don't have a management company doing my emails and things like that. If you take into account travel and so on and so forth, it's, you know, even just the amount of time that I spend thinking about the type of content I'm going to make and what my next video is going to be, brainstorming, all that fun stuff. It's very much even more of a full-time job than my actual full-time job is sometimes. Well, don't tell them that.
Never.
It really is the way that it goes whenever you find something that you're like really excited about. Even if you have like a full-time job on the side, it's like, no, the thing that I'm really excited about, I'm going to spend way too much time doing, even though it's not going to love me back in quite the same way all the time.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%. And it's like, it never really reaches a point where it gets easier either, quote unquote easier. It's easier being a content creator than most jobs. But when it comes to like the sheer amount of time you put into it, it never really decreases. If anything, I don't know if this is all content creators, but I feel like more and more avenues are out there for how you can expand upon your content. You know, maybe some people start off as Twitch streamers, or they start off as short form creators. And even if they get really, really good at that and they get into the flow of things, inevitably they're like, well, maybe I should branch out. Maybe I should do more stuff on Patreon. Maybe I should get into like actual play production. Like maybe I should go and start doing some writing. Maybe I should do like reviews. Maybe I should start my own company. Something like that, right? Where you inevitably end up branching out into a bunch of different things. And it just keeps almost snowballing into being more and more of your daily life.
So I think with that as a touchstone, let's look at what you are doing within the TTRPG content creation space. Like, what are the main branches that take up your time? If this is a pie chart, where are you spending the most of your time on that blueberry pie?
Man, definitely a disproportionate amount editing. And I hate editing. It's something where I, man, if I had the funds to just throw it at a friend and be like, please never, like, take this file. I never want to see it again. Just drop something in a G drive somewhere and I'll post it without even looking at it and I'll pay you and we will just never speak. If I could do that, oh my God, I would do it in a heartbeat.
It's the dream.
That being said, editors are rightfully incredibly expensive. And so, yeah. And also, I'm not a very good editor. I work in CapCut. I don't know how Adobe works and all that. So that definitely takes up the vast majority of my time just for the sake of me stumbling through things that definitely could be shortcutted. Shortcut, whatever the term there is. I think a slightly smaller amount probably goes to streaming. Streaming is one of those things where it's like there's no way to cut down or really streamline it. You know, you sit down. You press play, and then you're just hanging out with your audience for a set amount of time. And when it comes to streaming, especially, the best way to be successful doing it is to do it for a set amount of time at a specific start time, a specific end time. Consistency is key for all types of content, but especially streaming. So that will always take up a pretty decent chunk as well. So those are easily top two. Honestly, short form content, the vast majority of the stuff that I put out numbers-wise is maybe an hour out of my day. It's quite small compared to everything else that I do. Mostly because I don't script anything. And that could be to my detriment. I'm just not very good at scripting, but it's definitely, you know, I think what most people tend to think of as being like, oh my God, this must take forever to like, you know, write down exactly what you're going to say. And it's like, what do you mean write things down? Am I supposed to be doing that? No, God, no. Just turn on a camera and take 17 takes to do an intro.
This is an improvised medium.
Yeah, exactly. And you could tell. So those are probably top three.
I'm curious when it comes to like, so this is time we just talked about, but when we look at like Diana of the Rose, the business, because you have created this business that you run, this small business. What is the like single most important stream of revenue? What keeps the lights on of this side hustle that you've got?
Ooh, if we're talking about like overall year over year, the single best way to make a small business like this profitable is to utilize a network, which is where things like going to conventions, like us being at Gen Con next week, will be absolutely monumental and will be a direct line in that will supply probably, you know, the connections that will make me like half of my revenue every year, Gen Con alone, just based on the conversations that I'm having, the people I'm talking to, the networking and all that fun stuff. Beyond that, the easiest way to consistently create money as a content creator is through Twitch. Twitch has a really, really great revenue-making system. And if you have a consistent audience, then you make a decent amount of money through subscriptions, especially Prime subscriptions where your audience doesn't actually have to pay anything and they can still support you. It's quite fun. YouTube might also be up there, but I mean, both of them kind of have the same drawback where you have to also have an existing audience who cares about your stuff and that's dedicated to watching you in order for them, either of them, to be profitable. But Twitch is definitely like, you know, record for an hour, make the rough equivalent of $40 to $50 an hour, continue on with your day. It's good for consistency.
I think consistency is a thing that I think we're going to probably come back to throughout this interview, because it is like a lot of things in life like are not complex, but they are difficult, because it's just like you just got to do the same thing every day, in and day out. And it adds up slowly. It adds up very slowly, but it does add up. How do you look at keeping things consistent and sustainable so that you don't find yourself burnt out after 2 weeks straight of consistently streaming and posting things online?
This is where my advice is going to differ from what the actual platforms tell you to do. The thing about being a quote unquote good content creator from the side of like YouTube or from the side of TikTok, both of which I've had classes with and I've talked to like the actual creators of the platforms, have been like the equivalent of Streamer University, right? Being told, hey, this is what works on the platform. This is what the algorithm likes. What they say to do is to be as consistent as possible, not only with your posting times, but also the type of content you post. If you have a certain thing, like Jacob Powell's, for example, he does Roll for Sandwich. If you're known for doing Roll for Sandwich, you can never not do that. Otherwise, the algorithm's going to kick you in the shins for it. My personal opinion is that the more consistent you are with regards to your actual topic and your content that you create, your style, whatever, the faster you're going to burn out. Granted, burning out is kind of an inevitability. It's just you'll get there so much faster when you're doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Like, one thing you'll never see me doing is transitioning entirely over to being some type of creator, like dedicating entirely to doing skits or dedicating entirely to doing Magic the Gathering or D&D, because that's just soul-sucking after a while and it's a lot of pressure to put on yourself. And that's kind of what leads to the burnout. So generally, the only thing you really need to do consistently as a person, as a human being who's behind the account, is to post regularly, timing-wise, you know, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or every Saturday afternoon, whatever it is, making sure that's consistent will be enough for you to get going. And beyond that, just post what you're passionate about. People care about the passion more than anything, especially in the long term.
I find myself, because a lot of what I do is editing and sound design, and that is like, you know, for one episode of My First Dungeon, it's like 20, 30, 40 hours of editing to get this thing done. And I have a big list of stuff that I have to get done. But right now, there's a new project that I'm working on that I absolutely, in the week before Gen Con, should not be working on. This is 100% not the thing that is on my docket. And Elliot's looking at me like, I know what you have to do, motherfucker. Like, I know you've got actual work. But it's like, I could do the stuff that is like, it is going to be a bit of a slog. I love it, but it's going to be a bit of a slog because it's the thing I do every day. Or I could do this fun little shiny guy over here.
As a treat.
It's a little treat, yeah. And this is a thing that my wife always tells me, like, this is unhealthy. This is a bad mindset. It's like, I'm going to take a break from the real work and do the fun work. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, they're both still work. You're going to burn yourself out. Be careful.
Oh, yeah. And I do the exact same thing. I wish I had advice on that front to have a healthier working relationship, but I am the picture of an unhealthy one. So unfortunately, that's something that maybe some cetraline and a therapist could handle. But at least you've recognized that you got to that point, even if it took your wife recognizing it and being like, hang on now.
No, I know it's there. I'm just like, but the fun work.
There's no healthy working relationships on this call, or relationships with work on this call. I think we all are bad.
We're getting better.
You said a thing in there that I want to drill on, which is burnout is inevitable. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious where that kind of thought comes from when it comes to specifically this kind of work you're doing. And I also am curious if you say that from experience and have faced it and kind of come back from it in your journey.
Oh, thankfully not myself yet. I like to think I keep pretty fresh on things, especially when I get to go to conventions and things like that and come home with like the IRL version of Bardic Inspo. And that usually gives me content ideas for quite a while. And it feels less like work and more like, oh my gosh, this is like, these are my people. This is my community. So getting Gen Con and things like that to refresh that feeling helps out quite a bit in staving it off. But it's more because the platforms are almost designed nowadays in a way to incite burnout, especially with the giant push towards short form content. Obviously, it was TikTok first and then Reels because Instagram copies everything they see. And then YouTube getting into it finally, you know, as of recently, allowing us to use 3-minute long short form videos on their platform. So everyone's moving to short form. There's a running joke that everyone's attention span is getting shorter and shorter. And the platforms themselves aren't helping because they tend to reward, the algorithm rewards, one-off viral moments, or it feels like it rewards one-off viral moments. And so it's kind of one of those things where even if you become a large creator, over time, if you're not engaging with your audience thoroughly enough to take them with you throughout your content creator journey, even if you steer away from whatever made you viral in the first place, then you're going to hemorrhage views, you're going to hemorrhage followers. And I see it all the time on TikTok, even former friends who have, friends who were formerly massive on a platform. You go to their account, you see like millions and millions of followers, but you go to their reels or their shorts and you see like, why are you only getting 6,000 views, you know, and things like that happen more and more nowadays. And that in and of itself is really, really, really disheartening. And that's what leads to burnout, is people are then desperately grasping to try and get their viewership back. And in reality, it was only a loan in the first place. It was never really something that any given creator was meant to keep. That's not how it works anymore. And I think society as a whole, and by society, I mean content creators, are still kind of moving away from the old YouTuber aspect of things and moving into more of a viral creator aspect, and still in the transition period where we haven't quite realized how drastically different the viewership space is and how different those numbers are going to look. And so coming to terms with that, I think, can help with burnout a little bit. I think that's helped me not be like tied to my viewership and feel distraught at the thought of things not going well and then getting burned out as a result of that. But I can't speak for everyone, you know?
That line of the viewership was a loan, you didn't own it, is devastating and like really apt also. That's the thing that's going to like, I think, probably stick with me from this conversation. It's like, yeah, it's like, it's a totally different, if you think of, and this, there's so many things that I will end up like putting in words when talking about like the business of content and audience where I hate the way it sounds. But like, if you think about the audience as a source of value, which I hate these words. But if you think about the audience as like a source of value, the way, like you said, that's changed is so interesting because you used to just like, it's kind of the way the economy has changed in so many ways. Like, you used to be able to get a job and save up and get a house with, like, a normal degree.
What
and,
a
like,
thought.
You used to be able to make a YouTube channel and, like, kind of build it slowly and, like, get a really dedicated audience. And now we're all in debt. And, oh, wow. Sorry. I got just, like, bummed out about the world there.
I know. I'm sorry. Audience, I don't mean to make you all depressed. It's not all that, I promise.
No.
Well, I think on if we want to pivot this into the it's not all bad, I think that we always talk about on this show is like really practical advice for people who are interested in making this a part of their career, whether that's game design or actual play or content creation or anything like that. And I love getting into the really nitty gritty. This is like the unsexy stuff that is actually the meat and potatoes of what you really need to know. So from your perspective, are there any tools that people should be thinking about? Are there any lessons that are hard learned and hard won from you that you think a new content creator in this space would be particularly keen to know?
Yeah. The biggest thing that comes to mind is the fact that the TTRPG space is teeny tiny.
Yeah.
Everyone knows each other. I mean, before the podcast began, before the live show began, we were just talking about the people that we know who are like we're going to see next week in various parts of the space. And really, like, everyone knows each other. And at the same time, it's a very almost, someone described it to me once as a compressed pyramid, where the TTRPG space and the actual play space is all D&D as an inverted, like, massive part of the pyramid up at the top. And then everyone else is a teeny slice at the bottom. Same with Critical Role versus every other actual play as a teeny part of the pie underneath their 75% of the pie, or whatever you want to say, is arbitrary numbers there. So one thing to recognize is that the ceiling for your audience is going to be different compared to a generalized content creator, a food creator, really any other hobby. You are in a niche, and it's easy to forget that when you're surrounded by people who seem to be in the same niche as you, because then you have this in-group bias as a result. You think, oh, everyone knows D&D. Everyone plays D&D. I'll live forever. That's not how it works. Everyone knows each other, and your audience is relatively small. And when it comes to sustainability long-term as a TTRPG content creator in particular, that also means you're working with a lot of sponsors that have really small budgets. Most of the people I work with are indie creators who don't have, you know, Critical Role money or D&D money or Magic the Gathering money. And so I think it takes a lot more flexibility on that front. It also takes a lot more time being someone who is, you know, like me, who has a second job until you not only have your feet under you and are fairly convinced that you can sustain yourself, but shouldn't even think about quitting your other job until you have a nest egg, a solid plan for growth in the future, like just so much foundational work. Otherwise, it can very quickly go wrong because there's just not as many resources out there for TTRPG people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Networking is also huge, but that's within your space, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I want to say for anyone who hears the word networking and like gets freaked out by it in any way, networking is being a good hang.
Yeah, that's all it is.
It's being able to play a fun game at a bar with some cool people and then be friends.
Exactly. I like bringing up conventions as a really good example of this because the vast majority of the networking I do isn't on the floor of a convention. Honestly, I hardly talk to people on the floor at a convention because everyone's busy doing their own thing. And most of it actually happens at the hotel bars after hours where we get to talk to people about our hobbies as our actual hobbies as opposed to our careers. And then from there, it's like, oh, you're chill. You get it. You know where I'm coming from. Like, maybe we should work together. So the best way to network is to talk about anything other than work to someone. I ignore whatever they taught you in business classes.
I think this was 2 or 3 PAXs ago, I think. Whenever Orbital Boost thing was. I guess this was Gen Con, like 3 Gen Cons ago.
3 Gen Cons ago, yeah.
We were talking with Zach Cox from Soulmapa Publishing, who made the game Orbital Blues, like Sad Space Cowboys, a la Cowboy Bebop. And they were telling us about a new thing that they were putting out that was going to have like a D100 table of spaceship names. And we were like, oh, only, like, we kind of joked. We did a bit of like, oh, only 100, why not like 500, whatever. And Zach was like, why don't you guys send me like 500 names if you think it's so easy? And we had a 13-hour car ride back to New York from Indianapolis. So we spent about 8 of those hours just like, just shooting off names. So we ended up at the end of that car ride sending 600 of the most outrageous spaceship names.
Oh my gosh.
One of my personal favorites was like, are we still in Ohio? Because we've been in Ohio for 8 hours or whatever.
Dear Lord.
And it was just like a bit. It was just like we'd met this person. They were fun. We liked their game. And we wanted to send this like fun joke. And that was the reason that we ended up having like our first sponsored season on My First Dungeon.
Yeah.
And also like allowed us to have one of our like premier seasons that kicked off a bunch of other ones. And it was just like hanging out and having fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That also hits on a really solid point that I hadn't mentioned yet. You said that you did all of that on a massive car ride. one of the best ways to be creative exactly like that is to be bored out of your mind. I do most of my brainstorming on planes. So I 100% see where you're coming from there. That's also why I tell people, maybe if you're going to be a content creator, consider not scrolling as much. It will not put you in the headspace to be creative. Not so much as if you were forcing yourself to stare at an empty wall or some such, which is a little bit of an extreme other end of the spectrum, but still.
That is so real. I am a recent convert to the brick device where you can lock your phone up. I really like it. This is not sponsored, but this is just like, I think that is that little thing of just like creating a physical lock away from the distracting like scrolling apps is just enough friction where the days that I like am working now have changed in how much I am just able to focus. And then also when I'm taking the break from work, I'm doing that thinking and like being bored that leads to creativity instead of going on my phone. So if anybody is looking to be more bored and get more creativity going in their brain, I recommend the brick device. I think it's really sick.
That's awesome.
There's a thing in here, you're talking about the pyramid of D&D. We're all sitting under the pyramid of D&D. And this is a thing that we struggle with in our business of like, we play indie games on our show, My First Dungeon. And we will have a just lower ceiling because of that until indie RPGs grow, more than they've been able to. And they are. And like, as also an indie publisher, like I know they are growing. But I am curious how you feel about that balance in your work of like, you're within this niche pyramid and you do, 5e related content. You also do indie related content. You do like D&D related content. Like, and I think D&D related content is probably your bread and butter and like where you started. How do you think about that balance of where you sit in that pyramid and where you like to play around with your content?
I honestly don't think about it too much. I definitely have the D&D backbone, given that my real kickstart was doing a viral video regarding a D&D DM screen specifically. And I'd been part of the D&D sphere specifically for over a decade now. And now being a content creator that actually has an in at Wizards of the Coast and having more insight into what they're putting out, it's just inherently easier for me to make D&D content. But you'll notice that outside of that, the vast majority of content that I do is general advice that could apply to any TTRPG. Most of my YouTube content has nothing to do with D&D. It mostly has to do with highlighting a bunch of indie systems and mostly being like, hey guys, stop thinking about it in terms of, this is me talking to my audience, stop thinking about it in terms of what can I do to make my D&D game behave like this. Like, you can do that. I'll give advice like that as well. But more trying to get the TTRPG audience in general to kind of step outside their comfort zone and be like, hey, focus on the story you want to tell and find a system that works to complement that story. So I'd like to think I'm trying to kind of reinforce people having a good time with D&D and exploring themselves within D&D and, still having fun with this game that they've known and loved for generations and generations. And that's been incredibly popular after Critical Role and Stranger Things and all that, to absolutely massive spikes in D&D's popularity. And also being willing to start thinking of themselves as not D&D fans, but TTRPG fans instead, and being more open to that sort of stuff. So I'm trying to basically dip my toe into every pond, and we're seeing how it goes.
Hey.
I mean, we love that. That is like huge for us. Like, we try to do the same thing. I'm curious where that impulse comes for you, because there is a path in your position where you could only talk about D&D and probably make a career out of it. So did this come from like personal passion, or what led to you wanting to kind of give more general TTRPG advice?
I mean, the core of why I do what I do content-wise just in general is because TTRPGs in general, regardless of the system, have such strong mental health benefits. And I find that if D&D in particular, being the, again, incredibly old, incredibly like ingrained into society system that it is, with so many rules and a seemingly high barrier to entry, it's not actually that high, but it can be daunting still. I find that if it helps people to try something else that's not D&D, or at least like have some base knowledge that other games out there exist, even something like Dread, where you don't really need to have a character sheet, you don't need dice, all you need is a Jenga tower. You could go play Dread at like a bar downtown if you really want to. That sort of like accessibility and that base awareness is generally just good for people to know about, because if they know about it, they'll get interested in playing it, they won't feel as daunted by it, and maybe then they'll be able to get those mental health benefits from it. So it's all out of a place of games are good for you, and I just want people to play games.
Hell yeah.
Are there any indie games that are like particularly exciting to you right now that you've been talking about?
Oh my gosh, I really want to play Cult. Which I know is like kind of the
sure.
It's cultivity loss. It's kind of like the antithesis of everything I just mentioned, if you look at the content warnings on the front label, where I'm like, oh my God, positive mental health benefits. Anyway, here's a game all about like really dark stuff. But if you do it correctly, it can actually help you confront some of those really dark things that you can maybe relate to in your day-to-day life. And so there's the mental health side of it. Also, the art is amazing. And I absolutely love the concept of divine horror. I'm a big fan of horror in general. I collect horror games specifically wherever I can. I'm a sucker. Dude, anything that has a skull on the cover, I'll drop like $100 on it, no questions asked. So that's where I'm at when it comes to tabletop games. But Cult is definitely top of my list to be played next.
That's rad.
I'm a big believer in, you said, the mental health benefits. Horror is good for you. I think horror and tragedy and bad stuff is good for you to go through.
Yeah.
And that is self-serving because I made a tragic horror game. But yeah, I think it's good.
Hell yeah.
I want to talk about some of the other stuff that is like the business of content creation. And one of those is like working with brands and figuring out brand content and getting brand deals.
Yeah.
There's an element of that of if you have never approached getting a brand deal before, you might not know what people are even looking for. Like, as you've said before, like the landscape of the internet is like changing. Like subscribers used to be the thing. Now it's like views or average video duration. Mm. When you are reaching out to a brand or they're reaching out to you, what are the metrics or the key things that they are looking for that you can provide them?
I tend to find, and this is actually a really good segue into media kits. If have you guys explained those before in the past? Am I reiterating a point that has been beaten to death?
We talked about them a little bit, but please do reiterate. Yeah.
Yeah, quick rundown. A media kit is something that I provide to all of my sponsors and that they usually ask for. And every content creator should have one at some point in their career. Usually it's a one page, straight up 1 8.5 by 11 page, or it's a quick slideshow with maybe up to 5 slides if you're really feeling like you need to fill space. And it's almost like a resume for your content creation career. So it'll have your name, your username, what your channel's about, what your goals are, both as, you know, with regards to your content, but also with regards to who you want to work with, the kind of partnerships you're looking for. And the big thing that I find to be most helpful on the media kit is it also provides numbers, specifically followership and nowadays, especially 30-day metrics. If anything, they might care more about the 30-day metrics than they do about your actual following rate, which is quite a big shift as opposed to like overall viewership and overall metrics over the course of however many years you've been doing content. Now people care about like, how popular are you right now as a snapshot in the past month? Like how big is your reach? So 30-day metrics tend to be really huge. Media kit's great for that. One thing that I find that a lot of people try and put on their media kit and try and share with sponsors that they definitely don't need to is demographic information. I promise people it's going to do so much more harm than good. It has a way higher chance of doing harm than good to share demographic information unless asked for. When it comes to like gender breakdown, age breakdown, you know, world's reach breakdown for your channel, it's usually not what people are interested in.
I imagine like a demographic breakdown is great when it's at scale. Like if it's Coca-Cola, that is important. When it's a small indie publisher, it's like, we'll just take kind of everybody. we'll take whatever we can get.
Yeah, exactly.
Pocket Bard is the immersive audio app that allows game masters to weave music, ambience, and sound effects seamlessly into their games with just the push of a button. It's intuitive, easy to use, and now Pocket Bard has gone from your pocket to your PC. That's right, Pocket Bard is now available on your phone and your desktop computer, making it even easier to bring in the perfect music right when the climactic battle begins. Now, GMs who run everything from their PC have access to Pocket Bard alongside their other tools. It's the same Bard on a bigger screen. Plus, Pocket Bard is releasing their new cozy lo-fi collection for free to celebrate the new desktop version. These scenes will add even more flair to the quiet, contemplative moments of your game, where your players sit around the campfire and make plans for their next adventure. Download Pocket Bard for your phone or your computer from the App Store or straight from pocketbard.app. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. They can make your perfect mini in a variety of materials, including bronze, color standees, and color plastic options.
They can even put your custom miniature inside a 20-sided die, so your character lives in every attack roll and every saving throw. And if you like to 3D print your own minis, Hero Forge offers downloadable model files so you can 3D print your unique designs at home. And Hero Forge is constantly expanding its catalog of customization options. New parts are added every single week, and major features like new species and custom posing are updated on a regular basis. So visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature today.
Wild Sailor. Venture into the waves of the Wild Sea again, this time to the fabled home of the Chelicrae. The Wild Sea Sourdown is on Kickstarter now and is the new expansion for the Emmy award-winning Wild Sea, one of my all-time favorite RPGs, set in a post-fall ocean of verdancy, where you can play anything from moth people to the spirit of an iron ship to, of course, a very big and beautiful tree. Sourdown explores the home of the hive mind insect colony beings, the Chelicrae. This expansion features over 50 pages of content, including factions and hazards in the new Reach of Sourdown, new thematic background and ship options, and an adventure for those who wish to brave the pale groves. Death plays different on rustling waves, and through silk and honey, through spores and sacrifice, the lost Reach of Sourdown might be dragged into summer once more. Don't wait. Back the Wild Sea Sourdown now on Kickstarter.
Here we go!
Oh my god, he threw,
here
he
we
threw
go!
The chair. He threw the chair.
And now he's getting it back because right. We're gonna have to sit.
We are in Casey's home. That was Casey's actual chair.
You look out of the window and you see a Toyota Previa upside down on fire.
Oh, oh my god. Oh.
But it's not nearby any trees or anything, so it's fine.
On fire.
It's fine. It's not fine to me, GM. Jesus Christ, that's my fucking car.
Dynamite headbutt.
He screams as he headbutts this man.
Honestly, his left jaundiced eyeball pops out of his head.
Oh. And if you were to take a picture the second their two heads were touching, it might have been an intimate, tender scene between friends or lovers. But if you were to take a picture at any other second, yeah. It is just absolutely horrifying.
For some men, violence is a form of intimacy, which is so sad.
That is
maybe
so
for
sad.
This man. But anyway. Smashed in the head.
Bodhi has a pocket full of like one oversized precious moment angel that has a real strange face.
Oh, I thought that was your dick.
Oh, it was his dick. There's a hole in his pocket and his penis, which does resemble a precious moment angel with a strange face.
Oh, it's a strange face, but it actually looks like a pretty normal penis head.
That's what we call facts.
He looks back and he says one last threatening phrase, pointing to the bar.
I'm gonna... And Violet shoots him in the head.
You see this guy's ear get blown off, flying off his head.
Ah! Bye-bye.
And then at this point, Scratch pops up like a mummy.
Ah, mummy! Headbutt!
Dynamite headbutt!
Something is rising, piecing itself together from the bodies and viscera around it. Its black wings spread, and it looks back at you with red, wet eyes.
Gutter.
What makes a brand deal for you like an easy yes when somebody reaches out?
I usually try, well, usually horror is a pretty big one. It's almost always an easy yes. I try to work with a lot of indie publishers, and also if it's someone that I've worked with in the past, even if they're creating something that hasn't been in my wheelhouse. So for example, I work a lot with, and this is not sponsored, a company called Mana Project Studio, and I initially adored them. I loved everything they did. They put out a really cool 5e supplement that was horror-based forever ago, and I went up to them at Gen Con, and I've been emailing back and forth with them, and basically friends with the team now. So nowadays, even if they come up to me and they're like, hey, Diana, we have like a really cozy lo-fi sort of TTRPG we want to promote. Like, can you help with that? There's a 90% chance I'll say yes, purely because I love the team and I love everything they do. So existing rapport is huge, but generally like anything horror will also be really, really big for me. There's a lot of things I will say no to. Obviously, anything to do with artificial intelligence and AI-generated content is a automatic no for the channel just due to channel policy and you know, I know my audience. They don't want to see that. Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that I generally won't do but they kind of come down to specific genres of TTRPGs and things like that. So I don't have any like super hard lines. Pretty much everything's flexible, but those are the big ones.
And then once you start working with the team, once you get like that, you know, that first brand deal with a company in, what are your guidelines or the things that you do to make sure you're maintaining that relationship with that company to hopefully work with them again if it's a good experience?
Yeah, great question. Well, I try and keep in constant communication, of course, throughout the course of the actual deal itself. So once we strike a deal and say, hey, like, I'll get you a video by this time, then I try and make sure that I'm in communication with them for about 2 weeks leading up to the post date, where I'm like, hey, just checking in, is this date still good? I offer them a lot of flexibility, especially because with indie publishers, they often have unexpected delays. I remember when the tariffs were happening. Oh my God, that was horrific for them. It was like a nightmare for me scheduling-wise.
Elliot knows about that.
Yeah, I bet. Oh my gosh. That Gen Con, going around and saying hi to all the indie publishers and being like, hey, how are you guys? And they're like, oh my God, good. And I'm like,
bad.
Those tariffs, huh? And they're like, instantly, like, mask off. They were like, dude, oh my God. Just some of those real conversations I've had on the floor. But yeah, I try to maintain flexibility with them throughout the course of the video creation, giving them plenty of room for feedback. Even after I post the video, I'm like, hey, if you ever need any edits to it down the road, if you want to rerun it as an ad, please feel free. Reach out anytime. I'll hold onto the files. And then I also just close out by being like, hey, you know, let me know if you have any projects like this in the future. I also have a thing where my sponsors are grandfathered into my rates. And so if I have, you know, a sponsor that I've worked with back since I was, you know, 200K followers as opposed to 500,000 or whatever, they maintain the same sponsorship rate, even if my channel grows. So that way people who had...
Oh, that's great.
I mean, it's good for them. Definitely not good on the business front. So strongly consider if you want to do that, if you're a content creator, because I got some people who have like obscenely low rates nowadays, but also that's part of the working relationship. And that's just, again, a benefit that I can have because it's not my day job and I'm not relying on it to bring food to the table. It's mostly for fun. So I have the very, very good freedom to kind of charge relatively low rates compared to the rest of the industry. But that would also be a pretty big thing. And beyond that, I also say like, hey, if you guys are coming to a convention, would love to say hi in person. I would love to swing by the booth. If we can take this offline and at least put a physical face to the name, I would love to do that. And that's been pretty good for lasting relationships.
It is just being a good hang at a party. Just basically, like stopping by the booth and saying hi.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a bit in there. One of the things you said was the demographics and not including that. I'm curious if there are other like concrete pitfalls that you would recommend people watch out for when they're getting into this work that are similar to that. Things they wouldn't maybe even think of.
That you could share with a sponsor. I can't think of too many. I know of some people who have definitely fallen into the trap of agreeing to do too many sponsorships that they don't actually align with channel-wise or personality-wise. I've seen people do ads for example, like Dungeons & Dragons-themed cruises or vacations, and then they have to say at the very end of the video, by the way, I as a creator, I'm not going to be on this cruise. I'm not going to be on this vacation. I'm just doing an ad for them. And it's like, I don't know if you should be doing an ad for something you've had no experience with. It seems to kind of dilute the brand. It seems to be obviously not dishonest because they're talking about it, but it also seems like a choice has been made. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that choice. I also see people being willing to do too much for free, especially with smaller creators. I had this discussion in a circle of friends in the Magic the Gathering community recently where someone was saying like, hey, I'm getting a lot of emails now. She's just starting off as a creator. She's a relatively small channel and she's like so new to all of it and no one teaches you anything. So she was asking this big group of us in a Discord, like, hey, I'm getting a bunch of people offering to send me stuff for free. Should I like open a PO box? Like, what do I do? Do I need to film it? And it's like, okay, you need a contract. Like, you can't just do all this sort of stuff for free. You should make sure you've established the rules there, make sure that they're not expecting free exposure. Or if you do a little bit of, you know, content for free or an unboxing or whatever, like, make sure it's something that aligns with your brand, you know, because it can still be good for a relationship if they want to hire you on in the future. I've had a decent amount of stuff where people have sent me things for free. And then I'm like, I've opened it up and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually really cool. And then I do a whole video on how cool it is. And then they've hired me on for future iterations of that thing, actually as a paid sponsor. So, you know, I think taking care with how you handle, especially when you're first growing, initial offers is a really good thing to establish a foundation for early on.
There's also a thing that I had this experience. So I used to work as an assistant director in like television. And there was someone who was working under me who got asked about like a rate for a job. And it was well below what I knew like kind of standard New York rate for this position was. And they were like, oh, I think I'm going to take it. I was like, hey, you can't. And it's not because of this is a low rate for you or whatever. Like, you are worth more. That is absolutely true. But also, like, if you start taking that rate, it messes with me and all the other ADs because now, like, the industry rate across the city just got a little bit lower. And it's always tough to get it up in any way. So like, hey, you got to kind of think with everybody here. I know it doesn't feel good, but like, don't take those early jobs because then, or don't take that too low rate because then that's going to be what you're going to keep getting and it's not what you're worth. And it,
exactly.
It can be a bad spiral.
And that's what sucks about being a content creator in particular as well, is there's so little transparency across the board because we don't have guilds, we don't have like our own unions, anything like that. Really, the most we can do is head into our group chats, our friend groups, our little Discord full of just content creators and be like, guys, does anyone know anything about this company? Are they sketchy? Is this rate okay? And then just hoping that someone else has had the experience to be able to tell you yes or no. It sucks. And I really do hope that that's something that gets better. I think there are a decent amount of creators nowadays just across the board, not even just in the TTRPG space, that are being willing to come forward with their rates and talk about how exactly they're breaking down their packages and their rate cards and things like that, which is always good to see. And I really hope that accelerates.
It's an interesting thing that we talk a lot about in like design spaces and AP spaces about like, we all are technically competitors, but the industry is so much healthier when we are helping each other and giving those watch outs and stuff. How has like both community among other content creators and like actual like collaboration and like business together helped your career?
Ooh, I think it's been, for me, thankfully, nothing but good, the aspect of community. It can be a little bit of a double-edged sword. Like I mentioned before, everyone in the TTRPG space knows each other. And so the fact that you really can't do anything in the space without everyone knowing means that it feels like you're walking on eggshells sometimes if you're kind of taking on a brand new project and you're not sure if the creator is reputable yet, but you know, you got to take the dive or you need the sponsorship or something like that. On the other end of it, that also means that if anyone does anything really, really shady, like treats the space as a competitor space as opposed to a collaborative space, which is gross, especially for a TTRPG scene where most of it has collaboration written into the rules of basically every game, then people tend to get called out for it, if not just kind of ostracized from the community incredibly quickly for behavior like that. Again, it can be really scary because you're watching people ostensibly get like canceled basically day in and day out for being just kind of gross in their behavior towards other creators. But at the same time, it's a space that self-corrects in that sense. That was a very wordy answer, and I'm trying to be very careful about how I go about answering it because it's, I'm treating it like a monolith and it really isn't.
So fair.
Yeah.
But generally, the community has been incredibly collaborative and incredibly kind. And again, that's a consequence of A, being really small, and B, being all about collaboration at a table, you know?
Contracts are like, you know, they're a legal thing and they're like a scary and intimidating thing. But ultimately what you're doing, even if you are just sending an email back and forth, is just really clearly saying like, I will do this, you will do this. Let's be as explicit as possible so we know what the expectation is. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times when there is like that tension or that strife between anything, it's because we had mismatched expectations. I thought you were doing this for free. I thought I was doing it for money. I thought I was doing 10 videos. You thought I was doing one video. And the more explicit you can be with any kind of business relationship in anything that you're doing, the better that relationship is going to be. Like, I know for our actual players, we're like, hey, this is exactly how many hours. This is exactly how many dates. This is what we expect you to do on social media. This is how much you'll get paid. Mm-hmm. I give, you know, the big long email and I say, hey, does this sound interesting to you? You can let me know if there's any changes you want to make. If so, great. If not, no worries. We'll check back for another project. But then at least everyone is fully informed and knows what they're walking into.
Oh, yeah. My lawyer, he says it all the time. He works specifically in the TTRPG space. And he's like, yeah, contracts save friendships.
It's also a thing of, you know, if you're getting your first brand deal, you're not going to have a lot of like leeway to negotiate a contract necessarily. But ultimately, a contract is not a one-sided conversation. It's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. When someone is sending you a contract, that is an offer that you are signing. And then they are countersigning it. You can always send it back with addendums. That is a new offer to them. It is something that you admittedly, like if you don't have a lawyer, that can be a little bit difficult, but you can still add a thing, even if it's just written in your own non-lawyer language saying, hey, let me add this addendum. That is a thing you can absolutely do. Those people might not want to work with you if it's a small business thing. You know, that's always the thing that's going to happen. But that is always a conversation. It's never a one-way street, even though it can feel like that.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%. Honestly, end of the day, get a lawyer. It's really immensely helpful to just have someone. I mean, my lawyer isn't someone that I have a retainer or anything like that. He's just someone where I was like, hey, I really don't know how to file LLC paperwork, but I'd love to be able to call myself an LLC. Can you do this for me? And ever since that, we've had a great working relationship. And anytime I get a sketchy looking contract, I can send it to them, pay maybe $400, and then they'll send it back to me being like, hey, I fixed so many things on this. This was really sketchy. Don't sign this unless they agree to make these changes. Here you go.
I'll also add in, whenever you can, get an accountant.
I was going to say the same thing.
We got an accountant this year, and oh my God, I love this man.
Yeah.
It makes life so much easier. It's crazy.
Especially because last year we had so many, like, we did like W-2 stuff that was complicated because we did a SAG show and it's a whole thing. I was so underwater with it. I was like, this is too much. I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm just doing it wrong. The problem with any small business is it's okay to do something wrong, but the problem is there's going to be a fee associated with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as you're learning, as you're finding out what you don't already know, it's going to cost you a couple $100 every single time. And that adds up pretty quick. So get a guy.
Definitely.
Diana, when you're thinking about like the next year or few years, what are your sort of big hopes and dreams and goals for this business, like avenues you haven't touched yet or things you want to grow within the business? Do you want this to be your full-time job, I guess, is also a question in there?
I mean, I get this question a lot and I never really know how to answer it because it sounds really bad to just say, nah, I don't really have a plan. I'm going with the flow. But to be honest, I don't really have a plan and I'm kind of just going with the flow. I don't really anticipate ever turning content creation into a full-time career because it's really volatile. Especially nowadays, the algorithms change month over month. I mean, even in the course of my career, which has been since, 2021, 2022, so not even that long, there have been massive fundamental shifts in how these platforms that we rely on can change their algorithms, change entirely how they feed content to people, like how Instagram stopped making it so that if you follow someone, you automatically see all their stuff chronologically. That doesn't happen anymore. TikTok almost disappeared like 4 separate times. What was up with that? Generally going full-time, again, circling back to kind of what we started talking about, it's not a good idea and I don't plan on it. On the flip side of that, I also really like my job. It's very comfy. It's very cozy. And if I can have insurance and all these benefits and 401k and all this sort of stuff covered by that little laptop off in the corner of my office that's slightly in the background when I'm doing my filming day to day, then, you know, it doesn't cost me so much time that I feel like I need to balance between the two a ton. So may as well just keep them both. Can't hurt. But yeah, no, in general, I just enjoy being in the space. I think the top of my potential career would be just being a household name, you know, and being recognized and being able to go to conventions and still have like a welcoming community there waiting for me. I don't really have grand ambitions to like be on Critical Role or anything like that. I actually, quite the opposite. I'm not an actor. I don't want to be. So that's not really on the docket like it is for some creators. So yeah, maintaining, hanging out, having fun. Start off as a hobby. I'd love to keep it a hobby.
Yeah, love that.
We've talked about Gen Con coming up, and I know you've got a bunch of like events and stuff you're doing there. Can you preview like what for a content creator, like what does Gen Con look like for you coming up?
Gen Con is, I'd like to call it a 4-day bender, sometimes even 5 days. I think I'm there for a solid 6 or so of just networking, talking to people, basically trying to say hello to as many folks as possible and get as many plates spinning as possible that will carry you through the rest of the year. Gen Con for me is a lot of running around. Ever since I became a content creator, like a proper content creator, I would buy all of these tickets to different events at Gen Con, the things that people go there to do, like miniature painting workshops or panels or actual plays. And I just would not be able to make it. I would be stuck. I would be exhausted. I'd be busy having an impromptu meeting with someone who was like, oh my God, I love your content. I think you'd actually really like this. Can you come over to my booth like right now? Are you free right now? Or someone running into me and being like, hey, like I saw your content. How cool that we're meeting at this random hotel bar. Are you free for lunch tomorrow? Like, do you want to have a quick lunch meeting? I have a business thing I want to talk to you about. Scheduling is kind of futile when it comes to Gen Con. And it's, but at the same time, every minute that you spend on the floor talking to people, networking, and I'm just talking about the business side. I'm not even talking about like meet and greets and actually hanging out with fans because it's not really what this episode is about. Every minute that you spend doing that is invaluable, especially compared to trying to network over email or over social media. It's like a picture is worth 1,000 words almost, but for networking.
Yeah. The second you can get someone on a phone or face-to-face, everything happens so much faster and so much easier.
And they get a sense of your personality because so much of the space is so entwined with people's personalities. They also want to make sure that you're a good person if you're representing their small indie project or if you're representing their brand. And there's a lot of that, that especially in our space, comes down more to that than just straight numbers.
We've been having a similar experience at Gen Con more and more of like, it's just, it's go, go, go the whole time.
Yeah.
But recently, I think we talked about this on a different episode, but we recently went to Origins in Columbus, Ohio, which is like a much smaller gaming convention. Elliot had a booth there and we sold games. And it was a wild experience because we got to the end of the day, the convention hall closed at 6. And there wasn't like a lot of after party stuff. So we just met up with friends and played games.
What a concept.
At a convention.
Crazy.
It was wild.
Insane.
I had truly never done that before.
It's a lot of fun, especially because like once you roll dice with someone, once you play a game with someone, you know them so much better than you could through like extended conversation too.
We've said this all the time. Like you'll learn so much more about someone with like 15 minutes of a board game or like 15 minutes of a role playing game. Because like entering a play, like capital P play space with someone bypasses all of the bullshit that you would have to do with like the normal small talk or, you know, where are you from? How you doing type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right? You skip straight past the college introduction of like, where are you from? What's your major? What's one thing you do for a hobby? It's straight to, okay, let's see how you would react in this simulated environment against my character in a simulated environment. And from there, everything's easy.
And what's your weird little voice? My weird little voice is this. What's yours?
Exactly.
What a blast.
Diana, before our final question, a curiosity that came up in there thinking about Origins is, what are you like playing, or how often do you get to actually play with a day job and then full-time content creation job? What are you playing? How often do you get to play TTRPGs right now?
Not as much as I would like on the fun side, or rather not filmed, not for work. Wild thing about being a content creator, and this is the thing they warn you about when it comes to turning your hobby into a job, is that so much of it becomes oriented towards monetizing it, which is no one's fault. That's what we're all here for at the end of the, I mean, not what we're all here for, but that's the side effect of operating in the space, is people kind of expect you to do actual plays. And when you do actual plays, the vibe is different. There's so many different unspoken rules compared to when you're playing a home game. So the word home game becomes so much more important. But I think at the moment I have two actual plays? One actual play being filmed that won't be coming out until, I want to say, early next year, potentially in October. And that's just a little podcast thing with Beyond the Tavern Wall. It's the new edition of D&D, but it's an apocalypse type game. And then I've got two home games. And because of the conflict with my day job and everyone else who I happen to be rolling dice with being on complete opposite sides of the fucking world, I roll dice with people in Eastern Australia, Brazil, Britain. It's all over the place. So I end up rolling dice at like 1 a.m. my time every 2 weeks. That's one home game. Another only happens maybe once a month because of scheduling. So it's very sparse, but it's very necessary.
You say only once a month as if that's not the thing that I dream of.
Yeah, right.
Like I did a session zero for a game of Mythic Bastionland with some friends, including Cameron.
Yeah.
And Cameron Stripmatter from the Panic Table. And we have been trying in vain to get our first session off the ground. Everything is prepped. We're ready to go. We've got our knights. We're ready to seek the myths, honor the seers, and protect the realm. And boy, howdy, we cannot slay the dragon of scheduling. It is the greatest dragon that we will ever face.
Yep. Yeah, it's busy adult lives, man. They suck.
Truly. So, Diana, we have come to the end, the final question that we ask everybody who comes on Talk of the Table, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation for our audience. That can be anything under the sun. It can be in games, out of games. It could be to walk outside and take a deep breath. Diana Fey, what would you like to bring to the table today?
I would love to bring to everyone the suggestion to be bored. Going back to what we said earlier, boredom is the nexus and the cradle of all creativity. And you'll be shocked at what you can come up with when you're not feeding yourself a scrolling feed of stuff to keep you slightly entertained on a shallow level. That's where all the best ideas come from, of any kind.
Diana, thank you so much for joining us here on Talk of the Table. Do you want to let our audience know where they can find you online, all of the wonderful places, and what you've got coming up for them to check out?
Yeah, absolutely. I will actually be at Gen Con next week, along with the rest of the team here in Indianapolis for all 4 days of the convention. Woo. And after that, the only other thing on my con schedule will be PAX West. Oh, and PAX Unplugged. So doing the full PAX rotation for the continental U.S. this year. But as far as finding me over on the internet, you can find me as at Diana the Rose on all platforms. Primarily Twitch, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all that fun stuff. I will also be on Blue Sky and Threads. Blue Sky and Threads is definitely where I get a little bit more unhinged as opposed to just actual cohesive TTRPG advice. That's just me talking about random stuff. I posted the other day about gnawing on a Domino's pizza crust with the reverence that a medieval peasant would with a crust of bread. So that's just for nonsense. But beyond that,
I get it.
Thank you. Yeah, that's where you can find me. I usually give TTRPG advice. Sometimes I give content creation advice, and I'm always open to questions, comments, and stories from people. So definitely come say hi.
Hell yes. And if you want to talk about this episode or any other episode of Talk to the Table or anything we make here at Many Sided Media, head on over to the Many Sided Media Discord. We have a lot of great conversations there, a lot of great people hanging out. Come hang. And also, as a reminder, this is our Patreon drive. I told you about it before. We've got almost 100 hours of bonus content, plus a bunch of great stuff. We're looking for people to sign up for an annual membership, but even if you can't do that, give us a couple of bucks, download everything in our catalog, 4 fucking days worth of bonus audio, and then cancel your subscription and come back when you run out. We'll still be happy for you to check out all the cool stuff that's behind the paywall. As always, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See ya.